This show is part of the RetroZap.com podcast network.
This is Warp Trails, a Star Trek Discovery podcast, a RetroZap podcast network exclusive.
Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to Warp Trails. You found the RetroZap podcast network show devoted to Star Trek. I'm your host, Dennis Keithley, and with me is my wife, co-host, and most favorite Star Trek fan, Beth.
Hello!
Tonight we are continuing our coverage of Season 2 of Discovery with a discussion of the penultimate episode of the season, Such Sweet Sorrow.
And it is sweet sorrow because it feels like Season 2 just started and now it is nearly over.
Yeah, and this one's only 14 episodes. Wasn't last season 15?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's gone by quick. So we're catching back up because we're still dealing with our hiatus.
But if you haven't guessed, this is a full spoiler discussion. So if you've not seen part one of Such Sweet Sorrow, now would be an excellent time to pause us, go see it, and come back. We'll be here when you need us.
Indeed. Okay, so the episode actually begins with Sarek sitting on the beach in meditation, and Amanda brings up some incense.
And she looks annoyed with him.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to decide if that was supposed to be concern or support, but yeah, it kind of came off as annoyance.
Yeah, I don't know. And when he comes later, there's sort of a reference that I think was supposed to be dealing with whatever that was, but
yeah, because I mean, when it comes down to it, this season she's been far the more supportive parent. I don't even know what their last name is, but in the Sarek, Spock, Amanda, Michael household.
Right. Well, she's Grayson, I think, but anyway, moving along.
Regardless, the now, all of a sudden, he's the concerned one sitting on the beach meditating now. And then it gets revealed later that through their Katras, he figures out where they are so they can show up and say goodbyes. Of course, he doesn't tell anybody else in Starfleet, but we'll get to that when we get there.
Right.
So the crew of Discovery is preparing to abandon ship. There's a really cool effect with all these escape bridges covering the distance between Discovery and Enterprise. I'd never seen anything like that effect before in Star Trek.
I'd never seen it either, and it was really cool how the ships got really close to each other so they could do that, and there was clearly a way that it all needed to happen. And as a retcon of why Federation ships look a lot alike, that's an awesome way to do it. So that if you have to suddenly, and it makes sense, right? Like, if you have to suddenly get one ship empty, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, but that was pretty cool.
It was a
nice effect. They didn't really have to spend that much time doing that, but that's why this show is so expensive, I suppose.
And I'm glad they did.
Right. Burnham's got a voiceover going on and about, you know, they can't believe that it's come to this and people are gathering up their things. And after a brief discussion, you know, with Pike, pulling me back up, you know, she's basically saying, did we do everything we can? You know, there's this kind of self-doubt that's seeping in here, that is it really going to come to this? But you know, she reasoned it out at the end of the last episode that they couldn't destroy the data, they couldn't get the data into the future, and they can't get the data off the ship, so the ship has to go.
Yep.
But this doesn't really work at all.
No.
She gets a moment alone with the time crystal, and she gets a very brief glimpse of a possible future. And then they end up over on the bridge of the Enterprise.
Oh, we have to spend some time talking about the beauty that is how they modernized the Enterprise, but kept some of that orange netting kind of looking thing, and the handles and the turbo lift, and the way they cleaned it up, but still called out that, you know, 60s disco vibe.
Well,
I missed my girl, and I was glad to see her.
Yeah, because I remember the episode of Deep Space Nine when they went back to time, and they were to the Trouble with Tribbles episode, and they recreated the set from the original series when they did the Enterprise that time. This time around, they gave it a better look. I think that makes more sense for a show produced in the year 2018, 2019, as opposed to 1966 or whatever it was.
That's what I mean by modernizing it. But you're right, because they kept The captain's chair, the way it ought, the way it looked. I mean,
the spacing was the same.
The spacing
it was
the same.
It was clearly the bridge of the Enterprise.
The buttons were the same. You know, Georgiou makes a joke about the orange, and I was like, you will be quiet, and you will be respectful of where you are.
Yeah. But I was feeling a little colorblind, because to me it seemed more of a red.
It's more of a red. But you know what? It's all good.
Pike and Saru had engaged the remote self-destruct on the Discovery before they left. And mm-hmm. so they're now on the bridge of the Enterprise, and they go ahead and engage the destruct. It counts down from five, and nothing happens.
Nothing happens.
And then Pike orders torpedoes.
Yep, and then the shields are up.
And the shields are up.
Oops.
And before they can do anything else, Burnham has the full-length video version, as opposed to the teaser she got of her vision.
The full trailer of her time crystal experience.
Right, and which she's now back on board Discovery with Saru in command, and they're engaged in battle. This comes up a lot during the episode, but when we see these visions of the future, there's a torpedo, an undetonated torpedo sticking out of the front of Enterprise.
Yes.
And they keep highlighting that moment. So I got to believe that that's going to come up in the finale at some point.
Oh, for sure.
But she sees that, you know, they're losing. And then someone on the bridge announces that they've been boarded. Well, it's Leland. He comes storming onto the bridge, shoots everybody.
It's rough. That is a rough scene.
It's
y'all.
Not even close. Which kind of surprised me, considering that Georgiou did fight him hand, tooth, and nail just a couple episodes ago.
Well, but she was the first one he hit when he walked. In,
I know,
think.
But she didn't even duck. She didn't move.
No, I know.
It was just kind of, no one did. I mean, it was like one shot kills for everybody there.
Everyone got a headshot.
Yeah, and then, you know, Burnham was still on the floor from a blast that the Discovery had taken, and then he picks her up by the face. And shoots her in the head and says goodbye. And so then it kind of snaps back a little bit in time right before Pike was about to order the torpedoes.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, so it, really, I guess the vision had kicked in before the torpedoes were going off. Or something about the time crystal affected her.
Because she wasn't holding the time crystal. It doesn't matter. It was interesting.
Yeah, because when they were back on Discovery, Pike had basically left her in charge of bringing the crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as he left the room, she kind of took a quick look at it and then decided to grab it herself.
Which is weird, because did you see the expression that Pike gave that crystal as he was walking out? Like, That look did not encourage... I think he gave it the side eye. That would not have encouraged me to touch the time crystal.
Yeah, well, since when did Burnham listen to authority like that?
Well, also, please don't push the big red button, but, you know.
Exactly. So she announces this is not going to work, and so they got to come up with another plan. And
basically, we should explain. Basically, the idea is that this isn't working because the sphere data has incorporated itself enough into Discovery that it is protecting itself by using Discovery.
Right. Okay, so then they come up with this new solution, which is that they are going to send the entire Discovery into the future because trying to get the data off the ship and into the Red Angel and send that back in the future didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to destroy the data didn't work.
Right.
And so Spock and Michael and everyone put their logic to use and, hey, the problem is the ship. We got to destroy the container now. And,
right.
And so that's why, that didn't work. And so now they're going to send the container into the future. They're mm-hmm. getting here. They're persistent. I'll give them that. It's been one solution after another for the past half dozen episodes.
Well, and I'll tell you, I know we said if you hadn't watched this episode, take a pause. You guys, if you haven't seen the Short Treks and are trying to get through the season finale, I would pause and watch the Short Treks.
Okay, well, don't pause on this episode. Go back and watch that later.
Well, that's true.
So that's what they're going to do. They're going to build a new suit using the specs they have from Section 31. Michael is going to have to use it because the original suit was biologically linked to her mother's DNA. And then she said she had the most similar mRNA.
Right.
And that's what was going to give her the best chance of using it. And then they'll have the Discovery follow on autopilot. This plan gets revised a few times between now and the end of the episode.
Right.
But this is my favorite use of Vulcan logic, or any logic, throughout the entire season, is when Spock figures out that that this does work because they had already captured the Red Angel and Burnham's mom, and she said, I wasn't the one sending the signals. And these signals have always shown up exactly where they need to go and guide them to where they need to be. Therefore, and furthermore, when they had a scan of a Red Angel, it was Michael's DNA.
Right. So Hugh wasn't wrong. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Hugh.
Well, you know, we can apologize for that, but they did give us that weak explanation and let it stand on that earlier in the season.
No, it's true.
And that still was weak. What made it weak is they didn't allow for any other possibilities at the time that mothers and daughters can have incredibly similar looking DNA. Okay, 50%, is that incredibly similar? But anyway, so that's their plan. But the other problem they have is they need to find a supernova. And there's some great lines going around the table when this happens. And so they're trying to figure out how it is. They need a red star, which they say, oh, that shouldn't be too hard to find any sector. But then the problem is like, yeah, but you could be waiting 100 years for it to go supernova. When Georgiou proposes taking...
Shoot it
with black antimatter and make it go supernova.
Right then, Saru's like, you're gonna kill all life form within
a dozen light years or more.
She's like, yes. Oh,
There's no bad ideas.
That was great. And they're like, no, that was one.
Right, that's wrong. That's one.
She gets all the best lines in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
She and Poe maybe.
Well, and then she goes on about, well, you know. So we're just going to wait for another supernova. It's going to conveniently show up for us. And it does in the very next scene.
Well,
the next signal shows up and the planet Zahia.
Yes. So, which was great about that too, because, you know, it is such this sort of quasi meta comment like, oh, so we need one. So it's going to happen. And it's like, yes, the show writers have made this possible for you.
Right. Before we get on with that, Culber and Stamets have a moment here.
Yes.
And it's a little heartbreaking, I think.
Yes.
They've done a spore jump, and Culber finds Stamets and asks if he's okay after the jump. And Stamets is trying to get everyone out of engineering and moving along because they got a lot to do. Because they got to get the non-essential people off Discovery to make this whole thing work. And, you know, they just kind of... They have a conversation which I think is as close as they're getting to a here's how we're going to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Type of statement where Stamets says that, you know, he had recently turned down a job at the Vulcan Science Academy, but he's going to take a break from ships. And Hugh says that he's going to be joining Enterprise when it shows up. But the whole idea is moving forward, you know, and that's what Stamets has taken away. And then Stamets says, you know, I hope whatever happens that you're happy and that you end up with someone that makes you happy. And I was just like that. It was just heartbreaking. I mean, good for them that they're moving past it and all like that, but I really do want to see them get back together. Come on, get them back together already. We just had the speech last week from Jet to Hugh about don't screw it up.
Well, and I'm not entirely sure. I don't think Hugh expected that conversation to go that way.
Yeah. Well, he needs to speak up because they both started to speak at the same time.
Yes.
And then Stamets went on and Hugh didn't interrupt and Hugh didn't say, well... You know, because the thing is, like, he said he wanted Paul to be happy, too. He could have said something else then.
Yes. Yes, he could have. He didn't.
Okay.
We still have part two. I am optimistic. Love will survive.
All right, so they're there at the planet Zahia, and it just so happens that Tilly is familiar with this planet because she knows the Queen. Now, you've clearly seen the short. I have not. And at some point after the season, there's still three of these shorts that we need to review, and we'll do that at that time. But I think, without having seen it, we get between the previously on Discovery moment at the beginning and the backstory exposition that Tilly gives us, we know that the Queen is 17 years old, she likes engineering, she's really fond of ice cream and sugar, and she's brilliant.
There's not a lot of sugar on her planet, so she likes... the ship sugar. Basically, she was running away from home, ended up running into Tilly. She and Tilly have a bit of an adventure, but a really good bonding moment, some bonding moments. And both Tilly and the Queen, who I'm going to call Poe for the rest of the episode, both grow in the directions that they need to grow. So it's a good short. I do recommend it, especially if you are a Tilly fan. So yeah, that's my summation. That's all you need.
Okay. So the Queen is, like I said, she's brilliant. She knows a lot about engineering. Figured out how to recrystallize dilithium.
Yes. Which
amazes Stamets and everyone else that's scientifically inclined on the ship. But she won't share that technology because she doesn't trust anybody with it.
Right.
I'm not exactly sure why. It seems like something that the galaxy would benefit from in general. Am I missing something there? Is there some sort of Star Trek reason for not wanting to be able to recrystallize the lithium?
Because no, because I'm pretty sure, and write me if I'm wrong, because I do want to know, but I'm pretty sure in Next Gen they're recrystallizing.
In Star Trek The Voyage Home, they're recrystallizing dilithium in the on the Bird of Prey, the HMS Bounty is what they called it.
She eventually releases it into the world.
Someone else figures it out, or you know, reverse engineers her process. Not sure. It's now time to go over the plan once again, and the Queen is there in engineering, eating her Spumoni ice cream, doing physics calculations in the air.
Quantum physics in her head.
Yeah, Jet likes her, she likes Jet. And the problem that they run into this time is that when they try and drag the Discovery into the future, it's going to be a one-way trip because they're going to have to use... this is where all the science backs up on the
show. Basically, in order to charge the time crystal enough so that they can make the wormhole so that they can get both Burnham and the ship through it in the time allotted to them, because the Enterprise is headed towards Discover with a whole bunch of Section 31 ships, so that's their time. By the time the Enterprise comes with the Section 31 ships, in order to make sure everything's charged up, they're going to have to basically destabilize the time crystal so much that it's a one-way trip. They will not... Burnham will be able to use the time crystal once, but not twice.
And the other complicating factor there is that they're using the energy from the spore drive to do it. And as Jet explains, it's like you can get a drink from a waterfall, but you're going to drown afterwards. So Spock explains that it'll destabilize the crystal using that comparison. I love how he does that in this episode. Someone comes up with some sort of a metaphor, and then he says what they're trying to say is, and he puts it in simple English,
right,
in one sentence. But so yeah, it's going to be a one-way trip on that. And so, you know, this shock, you know, comes crashing in on everybody at this point. They're on the bridge, and they will, you know, they're going over this, and this is when the rest of the crew kind of finds out about it. And so they do something interesting in the show, and I can't remember if I've caught it in previous episodes, but instead of a salute... They stand at a parade ready stance is kind of their salute.
It's kind of their salute.
And so, you know, when they explain to the rest of the bridge crew what Michael's going to do, when Pike does this, you know, he says something like, all eyes up. Because he did this like eyes forward when on the bridge of the Enterprise when they were going to blow up the Discovery.
Yes.
And now he says eyes up. And so everyone goes into that parade kind of rest for Michael. And she's, you know, she says, I love all of you. And it was interesting that when she said that, the two shots that we got that weren't on her were on Spock and Georgiou. And I don't think that they just randomly picked anyone for that, because, you know, she and Spock had that troubled relationship that they mended over the course of the season. And then the other big troubled relationship, well, there's a third one, that's her and Ash. But the second one would be her and Georgiou. You know, they... You know, she doesn't trust Georgiou at all, or she didn't at the beginning of the season, and, you know, pointed out constantly to Georgiou that I'm just waiting for you to manipulate me. But as the season wore on, it became a little bit more clear that it wasn't all about manipulation, that Georgiou actually had some honest feelings for Michael.
Right.
And Michael, and when Michael's trying to suffocate herself to get the Red Angel to show up, you know, Georgiou, you know, she was done. She flipped out over the whole thing.
Well, and think about it, and they're entirely different relationships. Mm-hmm. But if I said Michael has relationships with Ash, Spock, and Georgiou.
Lover, brother, mother.
Well, right. She can fix two of them.
Yeah.
Which two do you want fixed? I don't know about you, but it would be Georgiou and Spock. Ash can go take a leap.
I agree, but that wasn't even, that's not where they were yet. I mean, you know, she and Ash kind of reconciled a few episodes. Again, right before she went to suffocate herself, they kind of reconciled then. But to me, it seemed like the two bigger episodes. But the two bigger stories, I think, this season really were. Well, the biggest one was Spock.
Right, for sure.
And then I think second was Georgiou and Michael. But then as she says, the next thing she says is that, you know, the greatest moments of my life were served with you or were in Starfleet or something that along the two characters they highlighted then were Culber and Stamets. And they both kind of, you couldn't see exactly where they were looking, but I think the insinuation was that they were kind of glancing over at each other.
Yeah.
A little bit. Perhaps they're not done. I'm hoping they're not done. I'm hoping next episode gets that resolved. But I don't know. I'm feeling like an old romantic when it comes to those two for some reason. So back in engineering, the queen is Poe, as you like to call her.
Yes.
Is creating this cage that's going to make it possible to get the time crystal charged up with the energy of a supernova. And as she'd said earlier in the day, she gets to create a supernova. This day rocks.
Yeah.
And to Tilly's chagrin, she's sticking around on the ship.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Was she afraid of taking on the mantle of queen and leading her people in the short? Or
yeah, that's not what she wanted to do. So the idea that she had committed to her people and her planet, and frankly, that, I mean, she was staying on the ship, but she was staying on the ship to protect her planet, not to run away. Mm-hmm. That was a big forward motion for her.
Yeah,
that was
she part said of something, her growth. Something effective about what she could do. She could sit on her throne and wave a hanky,
which
and, you know, the planet is her sister, and the best mm-hmm. she can do to protect it is to be on that ship. And so they're all in this together. So some great writing as usual in this series.
So anyway, so Michael sort of does her final goodbye to the bridge crew, saying that she's going to aim for where her mother is. So that she's the idea being that she's not going to be completely alone. She'll be with her mother mm-hmm. and that the Discovery will be safe because there's no technology there.
Right. And then Sarek and Amanda arrive. If I have a criticism of this episode, I think it's this. I think there's a lot of Vulcan mysticism going on. I don't understand all the Vulcan lore to figure out how this would work. They use this Katra, what was it, in the first season for mm-hmm. Burnham to find Sarek when he was injured in a mm-hmm. shuttle somewhere on a nebula and that worked. That's fine. But now we're going like across solar systems and through deep into it from one part of the galaxy to another using this Katra for Sarek to find her and Discovery, but perhaps he didn't really know enough of what was going on, but the fact that Discovery was not in communication, but he didn't think to find any other allies in Starfleet and bring them along. I mean, it's, you know, he just showed up in a shuttle with Amanda. What did you think?
Oh, so many things. I mean, it made for a nice moment between the three of them, so I guess I will forgive. My whole thing was, and okay, maybe Vulcan is closer to this planet, and so maybe it's okay. But I was like, how the hell did they just go much faster than the Enterprise in their little shuttle? I'm like, mm-hmm. what is their shuttle that it can go so fast?
Yeah, because the Discovery used the spore drive to get to Zahia, and then the Enterprise followed at warp and showed up, what, a couple hours later?
Yeah.
And somehow Sarek figured out where they were going to be and got there first. Yeah, I
couldn't figure that out. Which is fine. I mean, maybe not important. I couldn't figure out, and I get it, like, your adopted daughter is about to go into the future and may never reappear. So, yeah, sure. But I'm like, you're about to be battling. Maybe you don't want the ambassador of Vulcan on your ship as you are preparing
did
for war.
Did they leave? I'm not sure. Where
they
what happened?
Did. They
okay.
did leave.
Okay.
So there is a shot where the shuttle leaves and Michael kind of looks up.
Okay, I missed right that. Before I didn't put that commercial. Together. Yeah, I mean, it was a good moment. I mean, nothing. I won't take anything away from that scene
right.
itself, because it was they're amending the rest of the families. Spock and Burnham had made up episodes ago,
mm-hmm.
and now it was Burnham and the rest of the family, because, you know, she did not leave Vulcan on good terms the last time she was there with Amanda and Sarek.
Right.
And so it was nice to see them get things all put back together, and I like the way that Sarek asked for forgiveness, and the line when, you know, he says something like, I know I've been, and Amanda interjects impossible, and he says something, I will accept improbable. And but then he asked for forgiveness, and, you know, she says, of course. And I remember saying this to you during the episode, is like, how many episodes of Discovery this season has Michael actually not cried in?
Yeah, she has been through an emotional ringer this season.
And, I don't have a problem with the crying. It just seems that I don't think she cried at all in the first season. And I'm sure someone will know if I'm wrong there. But, you know, she was much more Vulcan last season. And this season, she's much more human.
Well, I think that goes to, and I'm skipping ahead and we'll get back to it, but Pike says something about how he enjoyed watching her discover her heart. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what we are supposed to, that's our takeaway, that she has discovered her heart.
Right. Yeah, so Burnham and Georgiou had also have a kind of a goodbye moment, and Georgiou's going through the whole You know, this is insane. You have this complex about having to throw yourself into possible situations.
And I'm not the only one who would use it to my advantage.
Yeah.
Advantage. Oh,
but, you know,
it's the best line.
It's kind of the goodbye tour that Michael's making. And then, so Michael preps for time travel and Tilly shows up at her door. And it just occurred to me that they didn't get a chance to say goodbye earlier. And, you know, Tilly says something like, you know, I didn't ever had a chance to blubber and throw myself at your feet and wail. And then she grabs her by the hand and pulls her down the hall where the key members of Discovery's crew are. And they all announce that they're going with her.
Yep.
That they're going to stay on Discovery and follow her through. And she's like, yeah, I can't let you do that. And Saru says something that's very wise there about that.
Yeah.
You know, she's objecting that they've got families and they got lives that they can't leave behind. But Saru says, when we joined Starfleet, our families accepted that we might be lost out in amongst the stars. And so, you know, we need to do this, and they've then follow this up with a whole bunch of scenes of everyone writing a letter or recording something to their loved ones back home. This episode was, I didn't shed any tears for it, but it was emotional. I mean, it was
emotional. It was a good way. 'Cause as you well know, I sometimes think it's all very cheesy and unnecessarily maudlin, and I thought they did a very good job of not making it that way. I mean, there was little bits of humor. I mean, Stamets doing his dear brother, thanks for translating the parents, you know, they love you the most. I was like, wow.
I like that one though.
No, that was very much him.
Yeah.
And Tilly saying, you know, to her mother, and they've got she and her mother have a complicated relationship, and Tilly saying that, I don't know if you're proud of me, but I'm proud of me, and I know that you respect that. I mean, it was well done. It felt genuine for those It felt genuine for all of those characters, and it was touching and emotional without, like I said, breaking into the maudlin.
Mm-hmm. Right, and then, I mean, you kind of got a feeling, at least in some of the speeches, about what the challenges that they overcame to be in Starfleet. And, you know, and in some cases it was the, you know, I know you had concerns and I'm sorry I'm not coming back and I would love to have said these things to you in person, but it was well done. It kind of reminded me of, in a way, all the Civil War letters that would go home to family members, like right before battle.
Yeah, I think something. That was what we were supposed to.
The one person who's not going to go is Ash.
Right, because he's going to stay behind with Section 31, and he's going to fix Section 31.
That's one way of interpreting it. I think the other one was that he was going to make sure that control never happened again. That so that when the Burnham and the rest of the Discovery crew made the sacrifice, that there was not this, you know, immediately followed up by another version of control that gets them all right back to the spot.
He's going to make sure. Well, that's good, because if his goal is to keep control from never happening again, he succeeds. If his goal is to make Section 31 transparent and non-evil, he has failed, because we've seen it in Deep Space Nine.
I didn't interpret at all his goals as being to make sure that Section Reform 31 was to make sure that another control didn't happen. So, you know, he's not going to go with, and then, but so he and Burnham have their goodbye. Then get to the bridge, and we're getting through this episode a lot faster than we normally get through them, because it really was a series of preparing for the next episode.
Yeah, this episode
is a setup, and I mean, I liked it, but it didn't have all the meat that you would expect on a regular episode. It was the appetizer, I think, for the next episode, the meal. Pike is there, and he's basically congratulating the crew on being a great crew, and that it was an honor to serve with them. He throws out compliments to everybody about rescuing him in the asteroid field and bravery in the face of danger. He gets to Spock and he stares at him real long. He says, there are no words, and says to Saru, I'm going to miss the hell out of you. Then he says to Michael, he had the privilege of watching her look into her own heart and discover what's there. And especially when people do that, they don't always find what they expect. And so, he was glad that he got to be there for her to discover her own heart, which was very eloquent. They've basically put Saru back in command of the ship.
But, right. He won't accept the captaincy.
He won't accept the captaincy until this is all over. And he feels like, you know, they've got more pressing matters to deal with right now than the captaincy of the ship. And that's a conversation. And he's right. I mean, he's absolutely right.
He's right. But.
Well.
At the end, I'm going to ask what you think is going to happen in the next one.
Sure. And then as Pike is leaving, the rest of the crew, the bridge crew all stands up and does that at rest salute for him. And he's back in his Enterprise captain's uniform.
Now, how did you like that?
I thought it was fun
kind of seeing like the Discovery people whose uniforms seem much more casual and comfortable. Because Pike's collar looked a little uncomfortable.
It looked like kind of like spandex to me, like around the cuff.
Okay, it looked kind of...
It didn't seem as restricting. I mean, I've worn plenty of restricting collars, and this one seemed like it was form-fitting, but not restrictive. But I really like the Enterprise uniforms.
I love the Enterprise uniforms.
What I was going to say is that I like Discovery's uniforms better than the original series Enterprise uniforms. I like the Enterprise uniforms from Discovery better than the Discovery uniforms, if that makes sense, if you followed that.
I did follow that. I think I would like to wear the Discovery shoes more than I'd want to wear the Enterprise uniform shoes.
Fair enough. I was thinking more along the tunics and the...
That's fair.
Yeah.
All about comfortable footwear.
Right. And I suspect you get some leeway when it comes to Starfleet at that point. Because can't they replicate this stuff?
I need more arch support.
Right. But then, they're back in engineering. They're trying to get that time crystal powered up, and it's not going fast enough. So finally, Jet kicks Tilly and Stamets out after they go through several different possibilities. They're essentially going to broaden the stream of power into it a little bit. That unfortunately lets a little seepage of the crystal out, which gives Jet another vision of the future, which is that stupid torpedo stuck in the front of Enterprise.
I know.
So if you didn't get the foreshadowing for the season finale, which we'll get to in a few days, there it is. There's going to be something to do with this torpedo. And if they don't, I'm going to cry foul. Because
there's definitely...
Because they built that up. It came up no less than 3 times this episode. And why else would an unexploded... Okay, the only non-foreshadowing thing I could see is just that, so that you know you're grounded in the same moment. You have an unexploded torpedo in the front, in the saucer of the Enterprise. But I have a feeling it's supposed to be more than that.
Yes.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad we're in agreement. So Pike and Ash are heading off Discovery, and Georgiou is going to transport them. And this is kind of a fun moment. So they get to the transporter pad, and Pike is saying that he's... doesn't completely understand Georgiou, but he's glad to have had an opportunity to serve with her.
Right.
And then he says essentially the same thing to Ash. And Ash says, well, do you trust me? And Pike looks at him. He says, well, because there's something I got to do before...
Right. I've got to leave before this battle starts.
Right. Just tell him. I mean, why are you waiting to the last second to have this conversation? But then the best moment, though, is as the transporter is energizing, Georgiou says, I'm a Terran from your mirror universe. Directly to him, and Pike says, "What mirror universe?" and then winks at her.
Yeah.
Okay. Did I miss it? I don't think he ever got that story during the course season.
In the first, when he comes onto the ship, he says he was fully briefed on what happened with the first captain. He knows what happened because
he asked Michael later about Georgiou, and she said now is not the time, but she promised to tell him about what happened. And that conversation at least never happened on screen this season. So, I forgot about that line, but it was weird, because it's...
To me, it was weird why Georgiou decided to explain that to him.
I think she was messing with him.
Well, I know, but other than just to mess, I'm not entirely sure what the value was, other than to see the look on his face, but...
Right. So Pike is back aboard the Enterprise, and the Discovery crew is aboard Discovery, and they've weaponized all the probes and shuttles and everything else. They've got a nice little mini armada.
It's a very cute armada.
Yeah, against 30-some-odd Section 31 ships, or two dozen, whatever it was, a lot. They get completely surrounded, and as this episode ends, Pike commands Enterprise to raise shields, and Saru says, prepare for battle.
Yep.
And that's it for the episode. So, it was very much the first meal in a two-meal course, So what did you think overall?
I tend to think in these situations that while I enjoyed it, it was a good setup. Mm-hmm. I will like it. How much I like it in the future depends very much on the second part.
I think it gives the next episode a chance to be great by getting all this type of stuff out of the way.
For sure.
Without trying to compress all the goodbyes and the plan and the actual action into 50 minutes by itself.
Completely agree. But if, like, the second part annoys me, which I really doubt it will, mm-hmm. but if the second part annoys me, then the first part will right. end up annoying me.
Yeah. But my other point simply is that this was all fine. I kind of feel like a lot of these scenes we've seen multiple times now this season. And I kind of felt like the goodbyes between Pike and the Discovery crew happened a couple times, that they repeated themselves. We kind of, cause you know, Pike brings up the whole, the ship's going to be a new captain. And then if you were not, you know, I guess you could buy this, there'd be a commercial break there.
Right.
And when they come back, they essentially go through these goodbyes again. And then he leaves the bridge and they do that salute. So I don't want to call it filler, but I just kind of feel like, maybe this episode could have been about 30 minutes, if that, and still accomplished everything it needed to accomplish. I don't know that it needed the entire 50 minutes that it took to do everything here. Obviously, you can't make it a mini because those all came out before the season. But yeah. But that being said, I liked it. I think this is an episode that in the future, assuming I like the finale, I'll watch back-to-back with the finale. I don't know. This is one to just be sit down and watch by itself. I wouldn't pull this episode out by itself just to watch it.
Right.
I think with Discovery, unlike the original series, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager, there just simply aren't as many standalone episodes that you can pull out and say, oh, this is the one where they go do X, Y, you know,
right.
you know, the Trouble with Tribbles type thing. You know, you can pull that out and it's its own self-contained story.
Oh, you can watch almost any, I mean.
Yeah. That's just the episode's name that came to
mind. Yeah, no, I know.
But no, I liked it overall, and I'm very eager now for the finale to see how this all winds up.
Okay, do you have any spoilers of the finale?
I have not seen any spoilers of the finale.
Okay, what do you think is going to happen?
I don't have any spoilers of the finale other than the next time on Discovery thing we saw at the end of this episode.
Yeah, no, that doesn't count.
And based off of that, I haven't spent much time theorizing, but I do believe they're going to get into the future. And they're going to find a way to get rid of the sphere data or beat control while they're there and get back, possibly with the assistance of Michael's mom. How about you?
I think they're going to go into the future and Discovery and Burnham will completely survive going into the future, but they will be stuck there.
Really? So you don't think she comes back for a season 3? Or
I think season 3 is going to be in the future. Now, I don't think it's going to be in there for the whole... I don't think it's going to be there for all of the season. I think they will spend as much time in the future.
Well, isn't it the future lifeless? I mean, the visions that we've seen.
No, because I think they'll be successful. So there'll be life there.
Huh. Interesting. Okay.
So Hugh and Stamets, together or not together by the end of the finale? Or maybe not like... Or on their way to reconciliation or not? Completely broken up or on their way to reconciliation?
That's really going to depend. Because Hugh's not on Discovery, as best I can tell. He's on Enterprise. And if what you're saying is true, then no. They're going to be, you know, partners separated by centuries of time. I don't know. I'm still thinking they're going to make it back. If they make it back, then I expect them to be back together.
Okay. I still think somehow they'll be reconciled. Because I'm with you. I want them to be a couple. And is something other than weird Star Trek technology going to get... Well, you have them coming back. So let's not do that. Because I'm so convinced I'm right. Is Spock going to actually go through the wormhole into the future?
See, I think he is. And that's why that's why I think they're coming back. Okay. Because, you know, he's told... Well, okay. You know, your question essentially acknowledges that he just, you know, he already said he's going yes. with them. He was part of that group that said they was going into the future.
Yes.
And so he would have to get off the ship, yes. which is entirely possible because we saw the preview for next week where, you know, she's running out of the shuttle bay and, you know, to a time cadence and there's all kinds of crashes and things going wrong. So I could see a scenario where mm-hmm. she needs some sort of assistance and he has to take a shuttle out to help out, and then somehow he's not aboard the Discovery to make that happen.
That actually, that little bit is what made me think that they're going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I can speculate and theorize. I just think that...
We're just guessing. I mean,
yeah, we're guessing.
Spock is a stubborn, stubborn Vulcan. If he wants to get back on before the before Discovery goes through the wormhole, I assure you, he will find a way.
Yeah, I guess it. I guess the thing is that if I am in the writer's room for this, and I am some sort of creative officer for the Star Trek programs at CBS, my concern would be if I now pick a season of the show and stick it hundreds and hundreds of years in the future, have I now just defined what that time period is for, because I just wanted to use it for a couple, you know, a handful of episodes in a season three or something like that. And, you know, we got Picard coming out, and that's take place, you know, a couple decades after The Next Generation. And how much am I going to restrict what I can do on my upcoming projects because I've defined what the future is in Discovery right now? That's kind of a cop-out way to be, I suppose. But I think they've got plenty of stories left to explore in this time period. That I hope they don't stick them in the future, next season. It's entirely possible. You know, I also didn't think they were going to spend as much time in the Mirror Universe as they did last season either, and I really enjoyed that. So I say all these concerns, but I really am willing to watch and give anything that they do a chance. Because they prove that they can do it. All right. Well, I think we've summed this one up and a lot quicker than we usually do. But like I said, it's really is the setup for the next episode.
Okay, here's my other ridiculous thing of speculation since we have a minute. The Enterprise bridge and sets looked really expensive. I can't imagine they're never going to use them again, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, we've been wanting an Enterprise show.
We have.
I would really like to see them do that. I mean, it's the
really expensive.
Pike was not the first captain of the Enterprise. It was April was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't, I mean, how much time does Pike have left before his training accident at this point?
Enough. I mean, he's got years.
So how many seasons could we get away with, do you think?
Four.
Three or four, if they wanted to do it? Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully they will. And I suppose between Discovery and Section 31... and whatever projects, you know, they've said, the creative team over at CBS is they've always want to have, they want to get to the point where they always have Star Trek in front of them, the audience.
See, and that's why you might be right, because I think Georgiou is going to end up going through that wormhole, and if she's stuck in the future, she can't do the Section 31 show. So that may be why you're right.
Right.
But I'm going to stick by my guess.
Let's go ahead and wrap this up. That'll conclude our discussion of Such Sweet Sorrow. We'll be back soon with a review of the Season 2 finale of Discovery. Before we go, Beth, where can all of our listeners find us?
We can be reached on Twitter at Warp Trails, on Instagram and Facebook at Warp Trails Pod. We can be reached by email at warptrails@retrozat.com. And we are hanging out often on the Warp Trails section of the RetroZap server on Discord.
Right. And that part of Discord is really, really quiet. So if you do show up there, we will talk to you. We promise.
We're so lonely.
We're involved in all the other rooms, but not a whole lot of people come over to Warp Trails. It's much more of a Star Wars place, RetroZap is. But we, you know, we are Star Trek fans, and there are other Star Trek fans around. So come
Phasers,
by and say
not
hi.
Sabers.
Okay. Our show is part of the RetroZap Podcast Network. Head over to RetroZap.com for other great podcasts covering everything from collecting video games, Dune, Game of Thrones, Star Wars, and more. Also, RetroZap is the home of my Star Wars podcast with Dar Taxis and Jay Krebs, Starship Sabers and Scoundrels. Our theme music is Wasp from Faces by Misha Dixon, which is available on the Free Music Archive. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Live long and prosper, and we'll talk to you next time.
I thought there were no bad ideas. Thank you.